This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Okay, so let's have an uncomfortable talk here really quickly. We've talked about many, many, many things before on this show, and there's one thing we've talked about many times before, and that's that there is a small, and getting smaller, a small cabal of red state GOP senators that are preventing so many amazing things. The second we start slamming the door shut on communism, a red state GOP senator will stick his foot in that door so we can't ever quite get there. And so our challenge, your challenge and my challenge, and it is going to be a mountain to climb, is going to be getting these guys out. Finally getting these guys out of office. And let's be honest, it's very, very, very difficult to primary and defeat an established GOP senator. When it comes to these guys, they're going to raise so much money. They're all of the swamp, so they're going to have 100% name ID in whatever state they're in. They're going to raise a gargantuan amount of money, and it's just going to be difficult. They're going to have a huge amount of control, by the way, over the GOP in that state. The state GOP, they have so many inroads. It's hard. It's really, really hard to get rid of one of these guys. And we'll do it, don't get me wrong, but it's going to take us years. It won't be next election cycle. Years as we slowly but surely work and raise money and find good candidates and come close and lose. It's going to take years. Which brings us to Donald Trump. And I understand that we always have to take the good with the bad. And that Donald Trump is doing really an outstanding job in his second term as president. But we have to be fair about that. Doing an outstanding job. But, like all human beings, he is imperfect. But imperfect actually doesn't describe how unbelievably bad he is at endorsing within the party. Lindsey Graham. In case you forgot who Lindsey Graham is, this Lindsey Graham.
So this bill would allow judges to take guns away from a guy like this before it's too late.
My bill with Blumenthal, the grant program for red flag laws, I think we've got in a really good spot with the White House, but that's just part of the package.
If the committee decided to, say, increase by $100 million your budget, could you spend it wisely?
I can assure you that any money that this committee thinks
good
sees fit, I promise it'll be good to use.
I believe you.
Pardoning the people who went into the Capitol and beat up a police officer violently, I think was a mistake because it seems to suggest that's an okay thing to do.
This idea, give up on Ukraine makes the world safer. If you pull the plug on Ukraine because you don't have enough capability, there goes Taiwan.
You and your people, you're the ally I've been hoping for all my life. Not one American has died defending Ukraine. You've taken our weapons and you've kicked their ass. And I'm very proud to have you as our ally.
Lindsey Graham has been there sticking his foot in that door for a very long time. Donald Trump just came out and announced his first in-person fundraiser in 2026. Who's it for? Lindsey Graham. And this is the frustration. The swamp, the deep state, they kneecap Donald Trump every chance they get. Every time they get a moment to kneecap Donald Trump, they do so. When Lindsey Graham was there on camera getting to second base with Christopher Wray, that was while Christopher Wray was working to undermine Donald Trump, the right, every chance he got. The deep state is after Donald Trump, and Donald Trump knows this, and Donald Trump is frustrated with this. He yells about it all the time, but then turns around and endorses it, endorses the people who fill it, endorses the people who protect it. My frustration is the mountain we have to climb. Whether Trump's involved or not, it is a very, very hard thing to primary a senator. So that mountain we have to climb is already brutal. It's cold. It's high. Donald Trump makes it 10 times higher when he continues to endorse the people he should be opposing. It makes your life harder. It makes my life harder. We have red state senators we can remove. We can get rid of John Cornyn. We can get rid of Lindsey Graham. We can get rid of James Lankford. We can get rid of these red state, John Thune. These red state GOP senators can be removed if he at least just gets out of the way. But please, stop working against us. Stop working against yourself. When Donald Trump endorses Lindsey Graham, he works against himself. And that's a fact. All right? Remember what we found out recently? Remember what we found out about Verizon recently? You know, the FBI, when it was illegally going after American citizens, hunting them down like the evil secret state police agency it is, the FBI went to Verizon and said, hey, can I have those phone records? I want to know who they talked to. I want to know the duration of the call. Shoot, I want you to tell me where they were. And you know what Verizon said? Oh, absolutely. They're Republicans. Here you go. Do you pay Verizon for that? Switch to Pure Talk. Pure Talk is the patriotic mobile company. You can keep your phone or get a new one. They have new ones. Keep your phone number. You'll deal with Americans. You'll deal with a company that actually loves freedom and loves this country and cares about your values. We have to stop funding these gigantic evil mobile companies. They're just the worst. Go to puretalk.com/JesseTV. Make the switch today. Let's talk about deportation. Let's talk about foreigners. Look, this is going to come to New York City and what's about to happen to New York City with the election of this Mamdani guy. So before we get to Mamdani in New York City specifically, I need to explain a couple things to you. First of all, you, how you think about government, what you want government to do and be. And none of us are exactly alike. You and I may differ on this issue or that issue, taxes or the border or abortion or something like that. But if I were to tell you that there was this candidate running for office and this candidate aligned with you on all of your issues, no matter what your issues are, every one of them, taxes and spending, and everything, they aligned with you on every single thing, would you vote for that person? Probably rolling your eyes. It's obvious, right? The answer is yes. But why? I didn't tell you what they look like. I didn't tell you what their skin color was. Didn't tell you their religion. Didn't even tell you their sex, male, female. I didn't tell you any of that, but you just said you would vote for that person. You know why? Because you think about politics in the correct way. For you, government itself, obviously something that should be kept at bay, should be kept restrained. But government itself, it's not there to reflect your tribe, whatever that tribe may be. It's there to do the things you want done, to carry your values into Washington, D.C., and get those things done. Now, this may sound like an obvious point, but that brings me to so many peoples from all over the world and how differently they look at politics than you do. This is a central part of what we're about to talk about when it comes to what's about to happen in New York City and what's happened in many parts of the United States of America. First, many peoples around the globe of various nations, religions, many, many peoples around the globe, they vote transactionally and tribally. The two T's. Remember this. You have to remember this because it's much, much different than most people like you vote. They vote transactionally and or tribally. Let's focus on transactionally first. They don't have this foundation, this DNA that you have about government and government should be limited and people should be free. That's not their history of where they came from. That's not what their family has always known. When you're selecting somebody to lead you politically, it's purely transactional. Yeah, what are you going to give us? What's your plan? What are you going to give us? Is it going to be money? Is it going to be food? Are you going to pave the roads? Specifically, it's not like they're against pork spending or something like that. That's what they demand. What are you going to give me transactionally? And tribally. Very, very foreign concept to most people in the United States of America. Certainly most people on the right. I shouldn't say most people in the country. Most people on the right, this is very foreign to us. For me, it would honestly never, ever cross my mind to, I'm really tall, to choose the tall candidate. What do I care? It would never cross my mind to choose the bald candidate. It would never cross my mind to choose the white candidate. I'm obviously white. I would never look at the field and be like, oh, he's black and he's Mexican, he's Asian. Ooh, the white guy. It's not how I vote. Tell me how they align with me on the issues, and that's how I'll choose. But for so many peoples around the globe, so many, that's how they vote. The issues? Issues? You kidding me? I'm a Muslim. Where's the Muslim? I'm a Mexican. Where's the Mexican? I'm black. Where's the black guy? I'm from Zimbabwe. Where's the Zimbabwe guy? I'm from Somalia. Where's the Somali guy? That's how so many people vote now and have historically always voted. It brings us to New York City, our most important city, the most important city in the world, frankly. New York City is about to elect a communist. It's going to happen, this Mamdani guy. An open Islamist, an open communist. And people, even people who've never visited New York City, who don't live in New York City, you probably don't live in New York City, they're just sickened by the whole thing. How could this happen? Why would they do this? But there's something we already know. An amazing thing, a sad thing. American-born New Yorkers have completely rejected Mamdani. He is getting slaughtered in the polls by American-born New Yorkers. If you were born in the United States of America and you live in New York City, you completely reject Mamdani. No interest at all. Nope, doesn't want him to be my mayor. But foreign-born New Yorkers, those tribal peoples, they love him. He is their overwhelming favorite. And so this is the point where the right doesn't understand what we're dealing with, because this is the point where we will start to explain why Mamdani's ideas are bad. What, you can't give out free bus fares. This is going to happen. You can't just open Rikers Island. This is going to happen. You can't do this. This won't work. That won't work. If he does this, this will be the result. But you may as well be talking to the wall. You're talking to people who vote tribally. They don't vote the way you vote. It's transactional and it's tribal. Did you know over 1 million Muslims now live in New York City? I believe the number is 1.5 million. Why do you think Mamdani tells these 9/11 stories all the time now?
I want to use this moment to speak to the Muslims of New York City. I want to speak to the memory of my aunt. Who stopped taking the subway after September 11th because she did not feel safe in her hijab.
First of all, that's fake. And now he's already had to come out and try to explain it. He made that thing up, the whole thing. His aunt wasn't even in New York City. His aunt wasn't wearing a hijab. He just made the whole thing up. So that, of course, begs the question, why would you make up that story? That's how you get elected in New York City now. There are legions and legions of Muslims in New York City. That's how they want their mayor to think, talk, and act. The story being made up couldn't possibly matter less. That was a story where Mamdani was throwing up the signal saying, hey, I'm part of your tribe. I'm part of your tribe. Vote for me. You can scream at these foreigners till you're blue in the face about what will work, what won't work. You can scream at them all day long. They don't vote like you vote. They don't think like you think. And this is why the United States of America has got to be so much more careful with who we bring here. And now we have to be so much more aggressive with who we've brought here. Do you understand, to truly save the United States of America, it's not just going to be deporting murderers and rapists. That's an obvious first step. We are going to have to deport 50 million people. We are going to have to denaturalize people who we've allowed to become citizens and deport them as well. I'm going to play you something. You've probably seen it already. But this Mamdani scumbag who's about to be mayor of New York City, the video I'm about to play you is his father. But before we play it, I want you to understand something. He got to the United States of America in 1963. He became a communist street activist in 1965. We brought him here from some dump, and he promptly began to start destroying the United States of America. Now, that's all bad enough, but he's been allowed to do this in the open for 60 years. A foreigner we pluck out of a dump, bring here, allow him not only to reside here, he's a professor at one of our most prestigious universities, and he has chosen to tear this country down for 60 years without that much fear of being denaturalized, deported, and sent back to the dump where he came from. What kind of a country allows foreigners to come here and tear the place down for 60 years without ever sending him home? As you watch this video and the anger wells up inside of you, do please reserve a lot of that anger for the politicians who allow this crap.
America is the genesis of what we call settler colonialism. And the American model was exported all around the world. Abraham Lincoln generalized the solution of reservations. They herded American Indians into separate territories. For the Nazis, this was the inspiration. Hitler realized two things. One, that genocide was doable. It is possible to do genocide. That's what Hitler realized. Second thing Hitler realized is that you don't have to have a common citizenship. You can differentiate between people. The Nuremberg laws were patterned after American laws. Anyway, the U.S. put Indians in reservations. The U.S. invented the model.
It's not like he was passing notes in some underground communist cell. 60 years standing in front of classrooms, sitting up on stage, on camera, with a microphone in his hand, taking a steaming dump all over the country that brought him here. This is why New York City is no longer America. It's why Chicago, Los Angeles, so many of our formerly wonderful urban centers are no longer America. And people ask, how can we save them? Because we can't go on forever with hostile foreign city-states operating within our borders. How can we save them? We have to deport people. Lots and lots and lots of people. It's time to send a message to everybody. If we allow you to come here, you be on your best behavior, or you will go back. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Your stomach. There's something I've noticed as I've gotten older. Maybe you've noticed it as well. Your stomach doesn't always react the way it used to react when you were a kid. I mean, when I was a kid, I don't know if there's anything I couldn't eat. My stomach can feel fine. What difference does it make? It's my stomach. It does just fine. But then you hit 35, 40, I'm 44 now, and every now and then something freaking hurts. Maybe that was too many jalapenos. You need some cowboy colostrum in your life and make your stomach feel better. Just makes your stomach function better. My sister's the one who told me about cowboy colostrum and started putting a couple scoops of it in my coffee every morning. Man, do I feel so much better now. So much better, no matter what. Stomach functions like I'm 20 again. Try it. I use the chocolate. I put it in my coffee, but they have several flavors. Go to cowboycolostrum.com. Use the promo code JesseTV.
You know, Republicans used to believe that not prosecuting criminals led to more crime. The answer here is take the politics out of the decision, and in this case, proceed with the prosecution and do the same for anybody else who does anything even remotely like it. Just read the indictment and ask yourself, if the government can prove what they allege here, shouldn't this man go to jail? The simple fact he had the documents for any reason or no reason should subject him to prosecution.
John Bolton is in some very serious trouble. Joining me now, Miranda Devine, host of the wonderful Pod Force One podcast, of course, New York Post. All right, Miranda, how much trouble is John Bolton actually in? I know I'm biased. I want to see him go to prison, but I also don't want to blow smoke. Is he in bad trouble?
Hi, Jesse. I think he is. I mean, what we've seen so far in the indictment is, and also just evidence that's out there, is that he kept classified information and he was emailing it to two members of his family. You know, and this was at a time when he was being hacked by the Iranians, and when he was being questioned by law enforcement or intelligence people about what the Iranians might have hacked into. Apparently, he didn't mention that he'd been using this classified information and emailing it in an insecure manner. So that's pretty serious. And, you know, judging by his own metrics of justice, he should go to jail for a very long time. I mean, I'm sorry to sort of say that, because John Bolton previously, until he was always a neo-con and a warmonger, but he was on the Republican side. And really, until he joined Donald Trump and was an abject failure and then became a never-Trumper, I would never have wanted to say such a thing. But now he's proved himself to be really Trump deranged. And that really, I guess, has nothing to do with his guilt or otherwise. But the fact is, it sort of mutes any sympathy I might have for him.
Miranda, can you help me? Can you help us, everybody, understand why do these people do this? This seems to be so unbelievably common with these people who have access to national security secrets. They not only take them home, they share them. They're emailing them. What do they get out of this? Why are they doing this?
Well, to be fair, I think that there is an argument that the government has overclassified material. And so maybe some of this stuff isn't really vital to national security. But there's also just an arrogance with people like John Bolton, and like Joe Biden is another one who, you know, he would have been pinged for illegally maintaining classified material, removing it from where it should have been, way back to his Senate days. And the only reason he got off scot-free was because the special counsel said that no jury would find him guilty because he's an elderly, they would see him as an elderly man with a poor memory. And so I think there's arrogance. And I also think there's ulterior motives. That classified information is worth a lot of money. It's worth trading for. And so in John Bolton's case, he was writing a book. He wanted to, I guess, use that information to refresh his memory. And in Joe Biden's case, he also was having a ghostwriter write his book. And he famously on tape said to the ghostwriter, I think I've got that classified material right here. And also, there's no proof of this, but since he was in bed and his family was making lots of money from the Chinese and other Russians, Ukrainians, various nefarious characters around the world, any classified information would be very worthwhile to America's adversaries.
Miranda, speaking of Joe Biden, what's this Joe Biden CIA cover-up story? Because it sure sounds like a really, really big deal.
Which one?
Yeah, That it's so sad that you even have to ask that clarifying question. So dirty, so corrupt. I mean, pick your government agency. We have to decide which particular scandal we're talking about was covering up for Joe Biden. I'm, of course, talking about the most recent one, where it looks like, sounds like Joe Biden ordered the Central Intelligence Agency to drop looking into him.
Yeah, well, I mean, this was an ongoing motive of his vice presidency. And I wrote a whole book about it. It was the CIA, the FBI. In this case, he wanted this information about the Ukrainians had been talking about how Joe Biden was coming into Kiev and lecturing them about corruption, saying corruption is a cancer, when his own son was on the board of Burisma. And there was a spy or a source that the CIA was informed by, that there was a lot of consternation in Ukraine, that they were angry about this, that the people close to the then President Poroshenko, Petro Poroshenko, didn't like the fact that Joe Biden was jetting into town, telling them what to do about corruption and not helping them at all. Basically, it was the vice president's office, his national security advisor, who said, we now have an email that shows that he said, oh, please redact that from the president's daily brief. So it never went into circulation like it should have. And therefore, America's national security interests were harmed, because there were lots of people who were doing business with Ukraine from the government at that time who should have been aware of these negative feelings from Poroshenko and his inner circle towards Joe Biden. I mean, it seems obvious now. It should have really been obvious to them at the time. But to censor that is shocking. But there's lots of glimpses into the CIA covering up for Joe Biden. In one example more recently, the IRS whistleblowers, then IRS investigators Gary Shapley and Joe Ziegler, wanted to interview Hunter Biden's sugar brother, Kevin Morris, the Hollywood lawyer who funded him to the tune of at least $7 million, paying off his tax bills and funding his lavish lifestyle in California. So they wanted to interview Kevin Morris. Obviously, he was a material person. And they were told by prosecutors that Langley, CIA headquarters, had summoned the prosecutors and said, hands off Kevin Morris. You can't even question him. So it's a big mystery about Joe Biden and why his family's influence peddling was being protected, encouraged maybe even, certainly covered up by the CIA, the FBI, the State Department, you name it.
Miranda, talk to me about Hunter Biden's shrink, because you just sat down with him on Pod Force One. That had to be frightening, honestly. I was going to say fascinating. That had to be horrifying.
Look, Keith Abloh, Dr. Keith Abloh, is a very interesting man. He was Hunter Biden's former shrink, as you say. He's ethical, so he's not discussing with us the secrets of the shrink couch, but he certainly was able to sort of diagnose and talk about the things that we know publicly about Hunter Biden, and so without divulging secrets. And, you know, it does go back to what I've always thought, I mean, with some sympathy towards Hunter Biden, that his mother and little sister, baby sister, were killed in a car crash where he and his older brother, Beau, were in the back seat. He was only two and his brother was three. And that was a very traumatic moment for him to be stuck in that car. Then he was recovering in hospital, he and his brother, for many months after that. And Joe Biden famously got sworn in as a senator by their bedside, which was a very, heart-rending photograph to go all around the world. But if you zoom back a bit, you wonder, why does the father bring the world's media into his son's hospital room. They've just lost their mother. They're bandaged and wan, and he could have done it out in the corridor, but he has all these photographers and small rooms crammed in, journalists crammed into this room, completely unnecessary. And that sort of set the tune for his sort of fake Father of the Year routine that he did from then on. And I think he was not a good father, and certainly not to Hunter. And a lot of Hunter's problems, I think, come from that, because there's a real love-hate relationship. And it was interesting what Dr. Abloh said about Hunter's abandoning all these laptops around the time that his father was announcing that he was running for president yet again in April of 2019. Within weeks of that date, Hunter Biden had abandoned famously the laptop that we ended up looking into from Delaware, that was dropped off. Hunter dropped off at the laptop repair shop around the corner from his house in Wilmington. But there was another laptop that not many people know about, that around the same time, Hunter abandoned at the Newburyport, Massachusetts home or guest house of Dr. Keith Abloh. Hunter was up there doing a sort of a drug detox thing with ketamine, unusual therapy. And that's where those famous photographs come from, where Hunter is sort of squatting in this sort of sensory deprivation chamber, supposedly to get off drugs, but he's smoking crack and drinking vodka. So anyway, that was Dr. Keith Abloh's place, and Hunter left his laptop behind, and Dr. Abloh called him repeatedly and texted him and said, come and get your stuff. And it was not just the laptop, but a whole lot of very expensive clothing and other personal effects, and Hunter just never picked it up and never answered. So Keith Abloh sort of surmises from a psychiatric point of view that yes, that could be kind of a Freudian situation, where Hunter kind of wanted to jettison. Well, my theory was that he wanted to actually damage his father's candidacy, because he didn't want his father putting the whole family through that again. But Keith Abloh said also to basically jettison his past. He never really wanted to be part of his father's political life. And so this was a sort of a symbolic or psychological way of just getting rid of his entire life and starting afresh. And as we know, Hunter did start afresh. He went to California, he met his now wife, got married within a few weeks, and became an artist.
Miranda, thank you, ma'am. All right. This Arctic frost thing, I shouldn't say it's a big deal. It is. It's the biggest deal in the world. But is it big enough? Meaning, are people going to be going to prison for this? Because they have to. We can't have a secret police agency operating like this inside the country. Joining me now, somebody who was most definitely targeted by this whole thing, great senator from the state of Tennessee, Senator Marsha Blackburn. Senator, you were one of the people in the crosshairs of the Federal Bureau of Investigation for the dastardly crime of talking to Donald Trump. Could you break this down for us in more detail? What happened?
You got it, Jesse. I will. And as you say, it is a big deal. And it's bigger than Watergate, and it's far more expensive than Watergate. And as we go through this, I think the American people are going to see it. We're actually going to do a press conference this afternoon. Here is what we do know. Jack Smith was named special counsel after a memo was written by Chris Wray, the director of the FBI, saying, we think there could possibly have been some kind of conversation between some conservative members and President Donald Trump, and it all centers around the 2020 election. So what we want to do is do some investigating to see if there could possibly, maybe might have been, some kind of activity. So they, on April 4th of 22, you have this memo written by Chris Wray, and the next day, Lisa Monaco, the deputy attorney general at the time, to Merrick Garland, the attorney general, Lisa Monaco says, I'm signing off on this, you should too, and Merrick Garland signs off. So then Jack Smith is appointed as the special counsel, and he starts his fishing expedition. And what they did was to spy on 8 U.S. senators. The commonality there is we're all Republicans who support President Trump and had valid questions about the 2020 election. It was a total fishing expedition. There is no predicate for them doing this. They went to a judge. They got a subpoena. They go to our wireless carriers. Now, AT&T moved to quash, and they challenged the subpoena, and Jack Smith's people backed down. Verizon, my carrier, did not, and therefore they turned over the records of every call I either made or received, who the call was from, the duration of the phone, the call, the number of the phone, and the physical location where I was standing when I either made or received that phone call. It is an invasion and a violation of my First Amendment and Fourth Amendment rights, the speech and debate clause, the separation of powers, and also the Stored Communication Act.
Senator, obviously we want to live in a country where everybody's treated equally under the law and whatnot, but also I'm understanding that you have a bit more of an important job than I do. To do this to a United States senator is so brazen. This has to be criminal, right? And I don't want to sound naive because I understand you said a judge signed off on it, but we are supposed to live in a system where this kind of thing can't happen, even if you have a scumbag in charge of the FBI or Lisa Monaco doing the things Lisa Monaco's always done. There should be laws that stop this. Why weren't there?
That stop this. And it is a violation. And yes, it is criminal. And that is why my colleagues and I have written to the current AG, Pam Bondi, and have asked for a referral of Jack Smith to the Office of Professional Conduct at the DOJ. It is also why Kash Patel didn't waste any time. He fired every single one of these staff attorneys and staff members that were part of that CR-15 unit that worked with Jack Smith. And it's also why I've written the DC Bar with a letter of complaint about Jack Smith. He should be disbarred. And he should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law, along with every member of his team that carried this out. And we know that they have also spied on over 100 conservative organizations. And here's the thing. If they're going to do this to 8 sitting U.S. senators, and it is unlawful to do this, then what are they going to do to conservatives all across this country that do not share their opinion? Or if you have some FBI field office that has somebody in it that doesn't like a member of a somebody in their community or a member of their church or the family of somebody that's in elected office, think about the power that they have to just really wreck people's lives. We need one tier of justice. Lady Justice is blindfolded. It should be equal access, equal treatment, equal justice. And the Democrats carried out weaponization of the DOJ and the FBI. They carried it out against us. And we are going to get to the bottom of it so we end this. No one, no Democrat, Republican, Independent, Green Party, whatever, no one should be subject to this kind of treatment.
What about Christopher Wray? You can't use the Federal Bureau of Investigation as your little plaything to help Democrats out and attack Republicans. That is, honestly, that is a crime. In my opinion, that is worse than murder. That is maybe the worst crime in the United States you can commit because of the power that comes with the position. When does Christopher Wray go behind bars?
Well, and he is someone that we will bring forward in our hearings. And we've got a meeting as to how we at Judiciary Committee are going to move forward on this. If we're going to compel people or end up subpoenaing people to come before us and have them under oath. But the fact that he's the one that wrote the memo that got Arctic Frost started. He wrote the memo. And the language in it, and it is on my social media, Marsha Blackburn, and it's also on our blackburn.senate.gov website. People can pull it up. They can look at it and read and just see how nebulous a lot of this language is and how wide-ranging. He wrote it so that you could scoop up people and then go scrape information and try to get a subpoena and get their phone records, and then try to track everybody they were talking to and how long they were on the phone with that individual. And if they call person A and talk to them, then did they call person B, and then did they call person A back, or did they bring in person C? And then, I mean, and where I was physically located. And was I at home? This is just one of those things you say, how could something have been this invasive and this intrusive? And they think they're going to get by with it. And you know what? Had Kamala Harris won the election, we would never know how weaponized the Department of Justice and the FBI was, not only under Joe Biden, but under Barack Obama.
Senator, shifting gears away from this, did someone try to kill you?
Well, yes. We have someone who has is on house arrest at this point, and that really is about all I can say about it because it's gone to a grand jury.
Okay. All right. Then I'm not going to ask you to ruin that whole thing. Let's shift gears to this shutdown. I don't see how it ends. The Democrats know it has to end, but their base is going to freak out on them if they end the freaking thing. It seems like they're stuck.
Chuck Schumer had planned this shutdown for months. That's why it's the Schumer shutdown. Basically, the Democrats decided to go on strike and close down the federal government. It's like they're filibustering, moving forward on appropriations bills, even though they're saying they're shutting down the government because they want to get some things done on health care. Well, as you know, Jesse, you can't talk about what is going to be covered by federal appropriations unless you are working on the appropriations bills. So they shut down the government because they say they want to work on healthcare, but you can't do it because the government is shut down. So the whole thing is ridiculous. And now we're up against the deadline with SNAP benefits. They run out on Saturday, November 1st. People are going to swipe those EBT cards and there will be nothing there. So in Tennessee, we've been talking to a lot of the food banks and elected officials and people that are involved. Churches are doing food drives for some of the food banks. And we know that people are stepping up to fill the gap. We've got about 700,000 families across the state that are receiving their SNAP and WIC benefits.
Senator, thank you as always, ma'am. Stay safe out there. All right, it's time to lighten the mood. I was on Megyn Kelly's live tour last week, and to say I was wonderful, putting it mildly.
Please tell us who Big Chungus is.
Okay. All right, so I'm sure you saw the video. Everybody here has probably seen the video of the stupid No Kings protests, and everyone saw that gigantic monster of a woman making fun of Charlie Kirk's assassination, doing the this and that and this and that thing. Just, you know, sticking her fingers in her fat rolls and being terrible about the whole thing. They are fighting a communist revolution. It's not an accident they're doing it. It's not an accident they're going after kids. They decided long ago they couldn't use the workers because American workers were, by and large, happy and prosperous. So they had to find a different group of malcontents. And now it's every feminist in a Subaru. Their souls are broken. They're angry. They're bitter. That radiates from them, and they spread it everywhere, and it feels ugly.
So Donald.
Yeah. So even ones that are kind of hot, like AOC, you get around her and you think, oh, that's gross. I would rather not. We woke up one day and, wait, they're taking Aunt Jemima off the pancakes, and there are more lesbians in the kids' movies than the WNBA game. We have to think beyond that and realize we are dealing with an enemy, and that sucks that you have to deal with an enemy. I wish you didn't have to. I wish I didn't have to. I don't want to have enemies here. That's not who I am. I don't want to. I want to eat Red Lobster. That's what I want to do. I want to enjoy, and I want to eat Red Lobster. But that's not the life we've been given. We have enemies here. We have to acknowledge their enemies and act as if they're enemies.
Isn't he so great? Can I tell you, like, the show is doing really well. The Megyn Kelly show is doing really well. It's because of guys like that. Honestly, we have just the best guests. And while I'd love to say it's all me, it's not all me. It's because I get like guys like that to talk to me, and they're so interesting, right? Isn't your life just better for knowing Jesse Kelly? It just is.
I agree. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.